Because, you know, in my mind, he was saying all these things without any evidence to back it up.
Okay, even if he was, yeah. Why would that bother you?
Well, I think it's important that, you know, people say something that they should be able to back it up.
Okay,
know,
but why would that bother you? Why would it bother you to the point where you would get in his face and hinder up to what he's doing? Whatever the reason is, he's doing it. Obviously something bothered you about.
Yeah. I mean, I think if anyone's going to stand on the corner and profess something that they know to be true, that they should be able to back it up.
Okay, let's say that that's true. But why then, if somebody's doing it not that way, they have nothing to back it up, they're completely absurd,
mm-hmm.
they're just nuts out there.
Right.
Why would you then feel compelled to get in his face and say, you're absurd, you're nuts, why are you doing this,
well,
you should not do
no,
this?
It wasn't quite that extreme.
Well, we do get that.
I know, and actually, last night you mentioned, you know, somebody actually spit in your face.
Yes, yes, and we get a lot of extreme reactions, and
yeah.
My question is, why? I mean, I'm not hurting anybody, Troy wasn't hurting them.
Yeah, but, you know, if somebody's out there saying, you know, you're going to go to hell, or telling young kids walking by they're going to go to hell.
So you're doing it to protect the kids. You get in his face to protect the kids.
I guess, you know, that might, you know, maybe one reason for it.
Yeah, but that's full of beans, I got to tell you.
But listen, I learned early on that
you,
wasn't
you,
the
you
right
gotta,
approach.
You got to understand your motivations sometimes are hidden from you. You don't know why you're doing what you're doing. A whole lot of people don't know why they're doing what they're doing. Even the street preachers might not know why. But you need to ask yourself the question, why does that bother me?
Mm-hmm.
And I guarantee it's not. No, it's not because you're protecting the kids, those poor kids walking by. Because, you know, there's all kinds of things that are much worse for kids than street preachers.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not standing in their face. I mean, you're not doing anything to them. So there's something...
Yeah, maybe we're kind of getting a little derailed. I mean, that's sort of how I started off. But then I realized, you know, if I'm going to have a fruitful conversation, if I can truly understand why these men are going out there and saying, you know, what they believe, I have to soften my approach. And really, you know, probably from February on, it was very cordial, where I would actually listen to what they were preaching and then talking with them afterwards. So, I don't want to get derailed and...
I'm still not understanding your motivation.
Mm-hmm.
Your motivation is what? Why do you want to confront these people who you consider absurd? They're saying things they have no basis
right.
to say. Why does it bother you? Why does it matter?
Because, you know, my actions are not in a bubble. They affect other people. Just like your actions would affect other people as well, right? You know, you take your beliefs to the ballot box. You have a say in what gets taught in schools to some extent. I mean, you can vote people in, that type of thing. Your beliefs affect people. You're not operating within a vacuum. Would you agree with that?
Nobody's operating in a vacuum.
Right.
Obviously.
Right, yes. So it's important for me that, you know, I want to believe in things that are actually true. I want to try to go through life believing in things that are true. And if something's not true, I want to be able to identify it. Because I think, you know, operating in reality is probably the most important thing that a person can do. Would you agree with that?
I think you are dancing all around your motivation. I don't think you've really considered your motivation.
No, I have. I've been doing this for almost...
So, you weren't raised by a street preacher that beats you every night to make you think, well, I've got to get back, I've got to do something. I mean, there's some reason why street preaching bothers you. And I'll tell you this, I am confused by it. Why does street preaching bother anybody?
Really?
I don't understand that. Why would me standing up saying, this is what I believe, why would that bother you? I don't understand.
But Billy, let's say that, you know, you saw like a Muslim standing on a street corner and preaching. Would that bother you?
Not at all.
Really?
I'd love to hear what they have to say.
If that street preacher was converting or convincing other people to follow Islam?
Absolutely. That's fine.
You'd be fine with that?
Absolutely, yes. And I don't understand why... You would not be. Why would you not be fine with a Muslim standing on the street saying, this is what I believe?
Oh, let me be clear. I fully support a preacher's right to be doing what they're doing.
Okay, but it does bother you for some reason.
It does. It does. I thought I've explained it, but, you know...
No, you haven't explained it at all.
Yeah. I mean, I want people to believe things that are true. If they're going to be standing on the street corner and yelling at kids or yelling at people that, you know, you need to follow my God, they better have a darn good reason for saying
it. Why can't they just believe it?
They can.
They just believe it.
You and the street preacher.
Why should they better have a darn good reason? I mean, it doesn't make no sense to me. I don't understand what the motivation is for someone to be in a street preacher's face and, you know, try to undo it. Unless there's something about it that bothers you. I'm trying to figure out what that is.
Well, I thought I said it. It's
no, it's not the children. Come on, let's
no,
be real.
It's the message. If you profess to know something that you really can't demonstrate that you know, I think it's an issue.
You don't think it might be more likely that your motivation is to humiliate or humble
no.
these folks?
And sorry, I think you're maybe fixating too much on, and maybe it's because you've had some bad experiences with hecklers or that type of thing. That's how I started off.
Well, you said it. That's what,
yes.
that's what I'm saying. That,
yeah.
And that makes me wonder, okay, what's going on?
But I haven't been doing that.
I know you have got some self-discipline now, and so you're
yes.
controlling yourself,
right,
but you
right,
still
right.
have the same motivations. There's something inside you that motivates you a certain way. And
I don't think I would ever get in a street preacher's space ever again, if that's what you're...
Because now you're more self-disciplined. But your motivation that made you do it in the first place is still there,
yes.
and you cannot really verbalize it. You don't really
I
know
think,
what it
I
is.
I thought I verbalized it.
No, it's not the children. Come on, Dad. It's not the children.
You keep mentioning the children, but that was just one example that I've given.
That's the only one. What is your reason? Just because everybody needs to have a reason to believe what they believe.
Sure.
Okay, they
yeah.
need to.
Like I said, you know, people don't work in a vacuum.
No, but street preachers aren't hurting anybody. They're not.
You don't think so?
They're not killing people. They're not. You know, they're not blowing people up.
Right.
They're not. They're just preaching. They're
yeah.
just telling you
and
believe
like,
the Bible.
And like I said, you know, I fully would defend a street preacher's right to get out there and do what they do, whether they're Islam or Muslim or even like a non-believer getting out there and yelling something. I would die for the right for Troy to get that out there and street preach. Absolutely. So I want to be clear on that.
But you do want to prove to street preachers that they are being absurd, or they're not
no.
thinking through, they're not thinking things through, or they're not intellectual,
no,
they're not whatever.
No, no, no. I've always told the street preachers that, you know, you might be that one person that convinces me that what they're saying is true. I'm open to being convinced that what they're saying is true. I am. But on the same hand, number one, you know, there's two motivations here. No, I guess three if you count the, you know, I want people to believe things that are true. The second one would be I want to understand why they believe what they believe. And the third thing is, if I can help show them that maybe the method that they're using to arrive at their beliefs is faulty in some way, I think that could be valuable for everybody.
I just got to tell you, the arrogance of that statement is amazing. It's
even when I preface it with the
no, the idea that you're thinking, you're saying, what you're assuming to start with is that you already know way more than the street preacher. You're already making just hear me out. You're making the assumption. I know that this street preacher is doing it the wrong way for his own reasons. Just the idea that you would come to a street preacher and say, you're doing it the wrong way. Jesus preached on the street. Paul preached on the street. John Wesley preached on the street. George Whitfield preached on the street. We're talking about people that you are at this moment depending upon for most of your culture, most of your the government system that you have. It all descends. I mean, you weren't born in a vacuum. You didn't fall off a comet. You landed somehow in this country that was founded upon people who believe the Bible or
deists.
Something similar.
Right.
So even deists believe the God of the Bible. They didn't just invent God out of nothing. They got their belief from the Bible. The idea of a transcendent God. Well, of course you wouldn't know. And what I'm just saying is, you're not falling off. Well, no, it depends on where you're trying to rail us to. The whole point is, you've got an assumption that you know that these street preachers are doing it wrong when the person who started it off told us to do it this way.
Okay. So you made a claim there, but, you know, again, like I said before, I'm open to being convinced that what the preachers are saying and that what you're saying here at church is correct. I'm definitely open to that.
All right.
Would you be open to, let's say that I had some evidence to show you that maybe that what you've been believing in is not true?
Sure. Show me some evidence that God does not exist.
I don't have that. But let's say that I were to have some evidence that maybe the Bible were not true.
Sure. Sure. Show it to me.
Would you be open to seeing it?
Absolutely.
Good. 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 The fact that you're open to it tells me that, you know, you at least be willing to consider it. I've actually talked to some preachers and people from the public that would say, nope. You know, if you had something like
afraid
that...
Afraid to not believe.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
I get it.
And you're fine with that. Okay.
You have some evidence. Now,
yes,
now if no, you have some evidence that the Bible is not true, then yes, I'm open to it.
Okay.
You'll but why concerned. Would you say that you don't have any?
I'd like to ask that question to get an idea of the openness of the subject that I'm speaking with. So 25% of the time, somebody will actually say, and I've talked to two people before where one person was nodding, nope, I wouldn't listen to it, and the other person was nodding yes. So I kind of like to ask that question at the start to get a sense of the openness to it.
All right. Well, what kind of evidence are we talking about? What would be the evidence that the Bible is not true?
What evidence? Have you ever considered what evidence that you might suggest, might accept?
Well, I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay. Like, for example, let's say that I suspect that my daughter ate some cookies from the cookie jar. And I'm convinced that she did it because she just has a guilty look on her face. That's something that I believe. But I'm open to changing my mind.
If she has an explanation.
Or let's say I notice my son and he's got crumbs around his face and he admits to it.
Okay.
You know, that's something that I would put forward to say, you know what? I have a deeply held belief that my daughter ate these cookies when I explicitly told her not to. But I can name something that would change my mind, that would show me that I was mistaken in my belief. Is there anything, Billy, that maybe you've considered that if I saw this in the Bible, or if I saw this in my real life, or if this happened to me, that's something that I would accept to get rid of my belief? Have you ever considered?
There was a time when I was in high school that I did consider a lot of things, and I was very skeptical, and I had to go through a time where I was. I don't know if you understand. After a while, you start building up. You start understanding certain things. And then you stop questioning those things because you've come to an understanding. That doesn't mean you've never, ever questioned them. I have questioned the Bible plenty of times. And in fact, I still read the Bible and sometimes I wonder, man, I must not be understanding that right. Because sometimes some things in the Bible are hard to swallow, or hard to explain, or hard to accept. And so, yeah, there's some times when the Bible is difficult, and I have to really wonder. But after a while, it's just like my father. I've known him for, well, my whole life, and I know him. It's not like there's a question about his character. And, you know, it's not like there's no possibility of any evidence coming to me to say he did this or he did that, that I would absolutely refuse all evidence. But there's so many times that he has proven himself to me as what kind of a person he is,
yeah,
that it would have to be overwhelming evidence,
yeah,
for you to show me something where I would doubt his character.
Right.
And if you had some overwhelming evidence, say you had three eyewitnesses that say they saw him do such a thing. And I went to him and I said, Dad, did you do that? And he said, no, son, they're lying. I did not do that. I would believe him over the three witnesses. And the reason why is because of long time proof of who he is.
Sure.
His character.
Sure.
Now, the Bible is the same way in my mind. I can't prove everything in the Bible happened.
Yes.
I can't prove everything is true. But so many things have proven themselves to me over the years that I give the Bible the benefit of the doubt where I can't prove it. It is a very persuasive argument. And the Bible is not irrational. The Bible is not an irrational book. The Bible expects you to reason, expects you to think things through, expects you to believe evidence. It's not expecting you to believe blindly. Many religious people are irrational. Many religious beliefs are nonsense. They're just absurd. And the Bible itself talks about many religious beliefs that are pure absurd. Rationalism itself as a movement came about through the Protestant Reformation because they got rid of tradition and said, let's start thinking things through and let's read the Bible as a rational book. And the Bible is a rational book. If you read the Apostle Paul, he is reasoning with you. How many times the Bible says that Paul reasoned with people to try to get them to believe what he was telling them. And trying to get them to believe that somebody rose again from the dead, that's a pretty tall order.
Sure.
And yet he had reasons. He had arguments. Have you read the argument, say, in 1 Corinthians 15, where he says, you know, how a seed, when it's planted, dies to itself, but then it brings forth fruit. It comes up again with a different body and comes up again. We could use the argument from, say, a caterpillar. a caterpillar in I was going to say in wells. I need to say he wraps himself into a cocoon. Some of those little caterpillars, they're in that cocoon for 17 years or 15 years, and then they come out, but they're not the caterpillar anymore. They're a whole different animal. And you wonder, well, what in the world caused that? And what does it mean? Does it signify anything? And yet then you see how it matches perfectly to what the Bible says about the resurrection of the just, and that we die and our bodies disappear. They decay. They're gone. And yet then God says he brings it back with a body as it pleases him. The same body, but reconstituted. It's a rational belief that there is a resurrection from the dead. Even though if someone looks for some kind of empirical proof, they might say there is none. And that's fine. And I agree, there's not empirical proof, except eyewitness proof that somebody saw Jesus Christ risen from the dead.
Right. I think it's Luke and... No, it's Luke and Paul. They report the 500, I think. Not 500 witnesses, right? If we can go back just a little bit, you mentioned your father.
Okay.
That you used the example that, you know, you have a past experience with him. You trust him. You have a trust in your father. And even if his name or his character was called into question and there were three witnesses, you'd probably still take your father's side.
I think so.
Because of that past experience that you had.
Yes.
And I would chalk that up and say that that's trust.
It is.
And it sounds like you're saying that.
But it's also evidence. I mean, I've been with him a lot.
And I'm with you the same way. I could probably say the same thing about my dad. If there were a claim that my dad did something, my database inside my brain would go through all those thousands of memories, and I'd probably come to a conclusion that he probably didn't do those things.
Right.
You know, depending on what he was accused of, right? I mean, if he ran a red light, maybe.
And you could be wrong.
I could be mistaken.
You could be wrong.
Yes,
he could have actually done something and then lied to you. And it's,
right.
Because he's
it's
human.
It's an embarrassing
so
thing.
So it's not impossible.
Exactly.
But at the same time, your rationality, you're saying, well, I know this man. I've got to give him the benefit of the doubt because of his past.
Yes.
Now, that's the way I feel about the Bible.
Okay.
It's been proven to me many times in things that are important to me that I give it the benefit of the doubt on the things that I can't prove.
Are you saying that you trust in the Bible, or is it something deeper than that?
No, it's trust. It's trust in what it says. In other words, things that have most people. I tell you, most Christians are not intellectuals. The Bible says not many wise, not many noble, not many rich, not many high, not many important people are called. A few.
Yeah.
But most people who believe the Bible do so because of experiences in their life that make them need God, and when they need God, the Bible has the answers. The Bible, I mean, there's doctrines there that solve their immediate problem. And not in the sense that they're no longer poor or they're no longer sick and dying, but it solves their big questions, the questions about life.
Comfort or something like that.
Well, if it was just comfort, you could just be comforted in lies. What I'm talking about is answering questions, giving you understanding. If you were to understand why, say, a child gets sick, it would help you get through the child being sick, but it wouldn't be much of a comfort. I mean, your child is sick and dies, and then you're. But it does give you an understanding. And when things start making sense, wow, that's better than I was. I'm better off now than I was before. And after that happens many times, and the Bible gives you an answer that gives you an understanding of what life is about, and it dovetails together with your own experiences, and it becomes very persuasive. The Bible's a very persuasive book.
Where would you say that you are on your belief scale? And I think I probably have an idea where, let's say 0% is absolutely no belief and 100% is, you know, you completely believe it and know it to be true. Where would you say that you are on the scale?
Well, my goodness, probably 75% of the Bible is obviously true. Obviously true. In other words, you just read it and you say, okay, that's clear. That's true.
I'm not speaking specifically about the Bible, but maybe just the God belief in general.
Belief in the existence of God?
Yes, sir.
I think that is deductively proven. I believe deductively, rationally proven that God exists. He couldn't prove himself any more powerfully if he signed his name on your forehead.
So would you say, I'm guessing here 100% for you.
The existence of God, yeah, yeah, that's beyond, that's like the law of gravity. I mean, come on, it's written all over the place. You can't, belief that God does not exist is like, it's like a shallow dead end that's dark and it goes nowhere. Whereas when you do realize that this life does have a meaning, it has a purpose, and that God created it, and the design is everywhere, you see it everywhere, it's obvious. Well, then all of a sudden, avenues open up everywhere. It's the difference between being completely stumped and lost and useless and meaningless and everything going against your intuition that you knew from the time you were a child. You knew your life had some meaning.
So it sounds like you're pointing to evidence, that there are evidences that you can point to,
sure,
from which you base your,
sure,
your belief.
Yeah.
Right?
Try DNA. DNA doesn't just write itself. DNA is like the computer code. It's a digital code that's in every one of your cells. And I'm a computer programmer. Computer code does not write itself. It never improves itself. It never gets better. I'm telling you that just the fact that DNA creates our bodies out of the elements that are around, just the DNA. Come on, guys. Seriously, that is empirical proof that there's a designer there that did that.
So for people, and I've actually had similar conversations with Troy, but because he's also very evidence-based, but for people that are evidence-based like yourself, where you've given examples of design and that type of thing, people that are evidence-based should also be able to give an idea of what it might take, what they would point to say, you know what, if I saw that, that would cause me to revise my opinion on something or my acceptance of something. So for example, and I hate to use evolution as an example because it's such a hot button topic, but there are a lot of scientists that have come to accept evolution as a fact.
Yes, they have.
Now, scientists should be able to, and they do point to, and I can point to something too that I would accept. If I saw a human skull in the Cretaceous period, that would be enough for me to ditch my belief or my understanding that evolution is true.
Okay, now whoa. You just made a huge jump from a skull in the Cretaceous period, which is a huge bunch of assumptions. A human skull in the Cretaceous period, which, even knowing what a Cretaceous period is, how long ago that was, whether it was deposited, how, and there's a big debate. But sure.
But
I'm just before you even skip there, before you even get to that point, just the idea that you say that would make me realize that evolution is true. Realize what you're saying. Evolution.
It would cause me to get rid of my understanding of evolution if I saw that. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
If I saw something that contradicted with our known understanding of evolution and how fossils are presented in layers, that would completely cause me to ditch my understanding of evolution. So I'm just kind of...
In other words, if you found a cross-layer fossil, a fossil in the wrong layer...
Yeah.
You would say then evolution is false.
Well, yes, scientifically verified, because I know that there are creationist explanations of fossils.
Wow. No, okay, that's fine. I'm not going to get into that.
Yeah, I know. That's why
will bog us down.
Yes, sir.
Time.
And that's why I hesitate to mention evolution, because I know.
Well, just let me point out something.
Okay.
Evolution is the doctrine. It's a belief. It's not a fact. It's not a scientific. It's not even a good idea. The idea of evolution is that this stuff just happens. In other words,
no,
listen, that's exactly what the doctrine of evolution is. Stuff just happens. It doesn't need a creator, doesn't need a designer, doesn't need someone that's making things happen. Just the way things are, stuff just happens. I mean, we get a soupy bog somewhere, lightning strikes it, and wow, amino acids somehow turn into proteins, and proteins somehow turn into DNA, and DNA somehow turns into snails, and snails somehow turn into humans. That's the doctrine of evolution.
Well, there's a disconnect there. You're mentioning abiogenesis, which is life coming from non-life.
Which didn't happen.
That's something that's unknown. We don't know how that happened.
Oh, no, you know it didn't happen. You're smart enough, you have intuition enough from the time you were a child to know that did not happen.
Okay, let's just set this aside for the example.
A calculator would prove it didn't happen. Fred Hoyle proved it didn't happen. Statistically, it could not have happened.
Okay. I really want to try to have a conversation.
It is a conversation.
Okay, but... You know,
seriously, you need to face a fact, and a fact is you exist by an incredibly complex digital code inside you that developed a brain that is 10 billion times more complex than the code that created.
What would you accept that would cause you to ditch your understanding of that?
Let it happen. Right in front of me, let life just happen.
Yeah. Evolution, well, there's a disconnect here, because evolution...
This digital code happened by itself. Let's see that happen. Yeah, if I could see that happen, then I would be, okay. Wow, I would never have guessed that.
That's interesting.
I'll tell you what, how about make a computer have a working program without any designer doing it. I mean, let's just... You get a computer and start running it, and let's have it make a program that actually works and does something valuable.
Yeah,
that
we're kind of getting off track here.
Actually, we're absolutely on track.
No, sure.
You see, you're talking about intellectual proofs of or what would make me ditch my belief.
Yes, sir.
Or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, sure, do that. But you already know that that's not going
to
happen.
Are you saying that if you were to see some sort of lab experiment that could show life coming from non-life?
Oh yeah, sure. Show me a lab experiment where life comes from non-life by itself.
Would you?
I would agree then that evolution is possible. It wouldn't even prove it happened. But
yeah.
Well, I would say it's possible.
Just to be clear, evolution and abiogenesis are completely two different things.
Yeah, because evolution cannot cause genesis. It cannot cause the creation of life. Life has to have a causer, has to have a programmer. Somebody has to put that stuff in there. The idea that evolution, itself, every little step of evolution that you're talking about, evolutionary steps, they also have to have programmers. If it happened, like you say, in billions of years and a little bit of incremental increase in information, every single one of those increases in information happened by a programmer. Somebody wrote it.
Let's say that there's an evolutionary biologist that's watching the video and he's just yanking his hair out because he knows that if he were to spend 30 minutes with you, he can, you know, correct any misunderstandings that you might have about evolution.
Right. It's not like I haven't ever read evolution.
But would you be willing to sit down with that individual?
Sure.
Yeah,
sure. Let him show me what he can show me.
I happen
to know it's already beyond argument in my mind that
everything that you just described shows me that you don't understand evolution.
Oh yeah, I do understand evolution. I've probably read more about it than you have. The fact is, you actually think that information increases if it's just thrown into random changes, just random, you know, generation after generation of little bacteria can become different animals by random recombinations of their DNA. It did not happen. I'm telling you, you ought to know better. If you were a computer programmer, you would know better. A computer programmer is someone who actually writes code to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
And the incredible amount of effort and work that goes into programming computers ought to let you see that whatever it is that's causing your body to happen and even to exist right now, that is incredibly complex. It is way more complex than any computer program we've ever done. So no, I have no fear at all that some evolution is going to show me, you know, how this could possibly happen. It did not happen. It could not possibly happen. And the only reason why evolutionists can still come up with this idea and say, you know, this could happen is because they have a very vivid imagination. They see very comparable things. I mean, apes look a lot like people, right? So since apes look like, well, they must have, you know, somehow improved, come out, got a big brain, and said, "All happened." How by, you know, the sun mutating things? And come on, that's just a big imagination. There's not one iota of proof anywhere, no empirical proof, not even a logical sequence of events that could happen that could make DNA code improve like that. Didn't happen. And you ought to know better.
I see I chose the wrong subject here. What I was really trying to illustrate that,
right.
if I saw something that could illustrate that, my understanding of a scientific fact, which is evolution. If I were to see something...
You think evolution is a fact?
Yes, sir.
Wow.
But if I were to...
How in the world do you get to there from here? A fact?
I don't want
a fact. You know what a fact is, right?
We're getting too much in the weeds here.
I don't think so. I think this is excellent. This is a beautiful subject.
Okay.
I'm telling you, evolution is no fact.
Okay, evolution is a fact.
Yeah, well, you can say it, but you can't
prove a scientific theory.
Well, how... Oh, wait. A proven scientific theory. How has it been proven?
It's been proven by looking at DNA.
No. DNA proves the opposite. If you just read the books, DNA proves that it did not happen. And if you go to fossils, they prove it did not happen. I mean, just look at the fossils. There were mammals way back in the time of the dinosaurs. Sure, there were mammals. They didn't happen afterwards. There were birds back then. You find the fossils all over the place.
I'm really concerned that we're kind of getting sidetracked on evolution there. I really don't want to.
You don't want to talk about evolution?
No, sir. I really,
it's not a fact, just to let you know.
It is a fact.
It is not a fact.
If we could just table that.
What else would be a fact that you consider a fact?
Gravity.
Okay. You're saying evolution is a fact like gravity.
Yes, sir.
You can prove it like gravity.
Yes, sir.
Wow. Okay. I'm going to wait for your video on that.
Yeah.
I want to see that.
I mean, it's out there. But scientists...
That's just arrogance, man.
Scientists are open to revising their conclusions that the theory of gravity is a fact or the theory of evolution is a fact.
Well, they ought to be.
They're open to it.
Sure. I'm open to it, too.
Good. Good. Are you open to... And you say you're so evidence-based with your beliefs, but are you open to something... I've given an example of what I would accept that would cause me to ditch my understanding of evolution, which is the human skull in the Cretaceous period. What would you accept? What would that be?
What is the Cretaceous period?
It's a period of time 275 million years ago. I
okay. All right. That. Long time ago.
Long time ago.
During time of dinosaurs or before?
Right. I think it's before the Jurassic.
No, not mistaken. What?
One would never expect to see a human skull bone in that period, which is why I'm just throwing
it out. Under evolutionary theory, you wouldn't expect
right.
to see it. It
right.
would be a very misplaced fossil.
That's right. That's right. So I'm giving an example of, if I saw that, that would cause me to ditch my understanding of evolution. What would you accept, Billy? What would it be that would cause you to ditch your belief that...
In God.
In the God of the Bible, for example. Your God. Have you ever considered what that would
be? Well, there's nothing comparable. You're talking about some little theory of evolution, which needs to be ditched anyway. And the idea that God created everything, there's no comparison to the point.
Are you unable to provide anything that you would accept that would cause you to get rid of your belief?
What kind of... Even atheists know that there's no evidence against God. I mean, we know there's no negative evidence. How could you prove ever that God does not exist?
I can never prove that your God doesn't exist.
Just right. Like, it's not possible. It's not the kind of
you can't prove
thing
that,
that you can prove.
You know, the visible pink unicorn doesn't exist, for example.
You can't prove it.
You cannot prove it. That's right.
Right. So what kind of proof are you wanting me to say would tell me God does not believe? What kind of...
I don't know. I've talked to some people that would say that, you know, if I saw 20 contradictions in the Bible, because the Bible is the foundation of my belief, and I wouldn't know about God...
If I found 20 contradictions in the Bible,
yeah.
I would say, all right, there are some places in the Bible that are not trustworthy. If I found 20 contradictions in the Bible,
right.
I would say, okay, I can't trust everything the Bible says. That doesn't prove everything the Bible says.
Yes, sir. And I'm just right. And but for somebody else, that might be what they would accept. And that could be somebody that studied the Bible. And
but you said to believe in God.
Right, right. But I'm just...
What kind of evidence can I offer you or even come up with that would tell me God does not exist?
What would you think of?
There's nothing. There's absolutely nothing. There's nothing that can even be suggested. Suggest to me something. Some kind of evidence that has convinced you that God does not.
Well, I gave you an example of something that I've heard before that somebody else that deeply believed in God.
And now he doesn't.
I don't know yet.
Okay, but
I don't know.
Now doubt.
Listen, no. This is just something that this individual put forward to say, you know what, if I saw that, that would cause me to doubt my beliefs.
Like what?
I just gave you the 20 contradictions. But that's this one individual. I would imagine that this is such a personally held belief that it might be 200 contradictions for somebody else. In somebody else, it might just be one. If I saw one...
Well, you could prove the entire Bible to be one huge lie, and that wouldn't prove that God does not exist. You asked me for evidence, something comparable, how open-minded you are that you would get rid of evolution if you could just find a skull that's misplaced.
Right, right.
And you want me to be that open-minded about the belief that God exists?
Yes.
And there is nothing comparable that you can even suggest that would be that kind of evidence.
And I think that
there's no evidence.
The disconnect here is that it really shouldn't be up to me to suggest what you should accept that would get rid of your belief.
Look, I believe that God exists because it is the answer. It is the same reason why Thomas Paine believed God exists. In his book, The Age of Reason, he just basically says, it has to have a cause. It has to have a cause. Everything has to have a cause. You can't just say, you know, I exist and I don't have any reason, there's no cause. No, intuition tells us all that we have a reason. We have a rational mind. Rationality does not come from nothing. It doesn't come from evolution. It doesn't just bubble up out of the ocean. That can't happen. Rationality is placed there by someone who's rational. We have computers that can do something similar to thinking, but it was created by people who think. You can't just have whatever we are. That can't just happen. That is just absurd. You want to talk about absurd? I know there are religious beliefs that are absurd.
I mean, it could be quite possible that just, you know, human beings or sentient beings are just a natural result of a universe that formed in the manner that it has. You know,
whatever. Look, that's the most absurd thing. I can't go there because that would be like me saying, I'm just going to deny everything it's like I'm going to deny that light exists, or I'm going to deny that gravity exists. Why would I do that? I know that my life has some meaning. I know it because it's in me. I can tell. Intuition tells you that your life has meaning. You fight to survive, and you fight to come up with answers. You're reasoning right now, trying to come up with some reason for existence, some purpose in life, something. And even to try to understand morality or ethics or beauty, understand music. Where does this stuff come from? It's not just random accidents. We are not just glorified snails. There's something behind all of this. And you knew it when you were a child. All of us do. We all know that life has meaning. We all know that our existence has meaning. And so just making your peace with the fact, that doesn't prove that the Bible is true. It doesn't even prove that the God of the Bible is true. But just make your peace with the fact that there is a purpose here. There is a designer here. There is a rational being behind all of this. And that solves an awful lot of problems. It also gets rid of this incredible arrogance in the mind of unbelievers about how, you know, it just all happened. It's just the evolution, you know, just kind of...
I think you kind of take issue with the word arrogance, where I think, you know, saying I don't know to a question where you don't know the answer is...
You said evolution was a fact.
Yes, evolution.
That's arrogance. That's way beyond what the evidence
points. Well, it could be backed up.
So. Absolutely not. Cannot be backed up. There's no evidence for evolution at all. You can't point to one single... You can't point to a fingernail happening by random mutations. You can't point to a feather coming from a scale by random mutations. In fact, the concept of it is ludicrous. A feather is incredibly complex. Incredibly. It's a design that's amazing. If you just study it, it didn't come by random mutations. Come on, man. That's arrogance to say that's a fact.
Well, that is a fact. But to say that...
Boy, that's arrogance.
No. If I go back to like life coming from non-life, you know, we don't know, scientists don't know
how in the world that could possibly happen. Yeah.
I think that's, you know, the most intellectually honest answer to give when you don't.
Sure, you don't know how it happened. You have to say we have no clue how it happened because there is no explanation, or somebody very intelligent put that together.
Now it seems like a lot of the things that you've been saying were, you know, it almost sounds like you seem very deistic in some of the things that you've said. Where?
What do you mean? I believe there's a God.
You believe there's a God. The Bible may not be 100% true.
No, I didn't say that. I have several levels of faith in the Bible. I'm not saying that the Bible is false anywhere, because I cannot prove that it's false. I don't know. But there are several, for example, there are some things I told you, 75% of the Bible I consider to be so obvious that, I mean, we're not going to argue about that, are we? I mean, there was a person named Paul. He was an apostle. He went around preaching. He believed he saw something. That's what he said. What we have written there is true. I mean, it's obvious. There was a Pontius Pilate. There was a John the Baptist. These people did exist. There was a Moses. In fact, we can trace archaeologically the Bible back as far as Abraham, and even before him somewhat. And the places that they mention, yeah, they were there. There were times when some arrogant scientists said, well, you know, the Hittites didn't exist, that's just a made up thing. But then they found them, and they'll keep finding them. Whatever they don't know now, they'll find them. 75% of the Bible is not really under debate. It's not debatable. You got the first 11 chapters you might debate.
Are you talking Old Testament?
Old Testament. First 11 chapters of the Old Testament, creation by God and the flood and what have you. But come down to Abraham, and it becomes less and less debatable because these people did exist. I mean, there's all kinds of proofs. We have books that show that can prove that the Gospels were written in the first century. There are many, right. Even though that was doubted by
after
a lot
the death of Jesus, though, right?
Yes,
several decades after.
Probably several right. decades, but during this first century. In other words, that they are genuine. They weren't created by the Christian community in the second century. Most of the Bible is obvious. Okay, but there are a lot of things in the Bible that are controversial. Some of those things, that 25%, some of those things that I would have doubted, and I did doubt at one time, have proven themselves to me. And they've proven themselves to me by several methods. There are prophecies that, wow, that really did happen. This was actually prophesied. Jesus prophesied the destruction of Jerusalem. He prophesied it. He said it was going to be destroyed in his in their lifetime. And it was. And of course, the book of Daniel. And there's a lot of prophecies. And even today, even to this day, it said that the Jewish people would not be destroyed. They're going to still be around. And here they are. And even the fact that they were going to return to their land was prophesied. And so many things like that, they give you reason to trust. That's not empirical proof that the Bible is true, but at least in those things, there's reason to trust it.
Kind of like the example with your dad you were saying, where you had a reason to trust your dad because of your past experience with it, and maybe in the same
yes.
light you're
pointing
to the
second,
Bible.
That's the second stage. Mm-hmm. There's a second level of things in the Bible. And a lot of things have proven themselves to me by my own personal experience.
I see. Yep.
So that I can say, yes, some prayers do get answered. I asked the Lord for something, and okay, he took care of that.
Is there any limit to your ability to pray for something and have it come true?
Most prayers that I pray don't happen in a miraculous way or any way that I could say God did that. I see God intervening in our lives very seldom. That is personally, directly. He works through the Bible and through faith. But that's, you know, that's something you'd have to accept to start before you can get into that. It's, you almost have to believe it before you start it. What I'm saying is there's another level of the Bible of things that I was saying some of the things in the Bible just plain ring true. For example, the Bible says babies are sinners. Now that's something deists can't stand. That's something that atheists can't stand, the idea that babies are sinners. Well, the Bible actually says that. And yet, I've had a lot of babies. And yeah, they are sinners. They do what they shouldn't do.
Like reaching for a sucker or something?
No. They pitch a fit, or they shout horrible, ugly things. I didn't teach them these things. They steal from their own parents. And I'm talking about being selfish and being what I can see that there is an innate. In other words, so the Bible says something, and I say, yeah, you know, I think the Bible is right. But those are more like I'm convinced by the Bible.
Yeah.
That's not empirical.
But in that example, let's say
there's a third.
Okay.
There's a third.
I don't want to lose my train of thought here on this one point, but
you won't lose it. There's a third line, parts of the Bible that are to me difficult. I don't know how to apply them. I don't know if I'm understanding it right, or if I am understanding it, I have difficulty believing it. And yet, I'm not ready, because of my respect for it, for the people who wrote it. For example, Apostle Paul writes something, and it makes me question, and that I would not disagree with him dogmatically. I would not say he's wrong, because I trust that he has more knowledge than I do on that. And so there are different levels of belief, but there's no part of the Bible that I can say is false. I can't prove it. I don't know how I would. Now, what you said,
I was going to say, in the example of, you know, a child being selfish or being a sinner, if that same evolutionary biologist were to come out and say, you know, and be able to demonstrate that, you know, being selfish was a desired trait. So, for example, you know, as creatures were evolving that preceded us, it was selectively advantaged to die for the whole first you know, when a predator was coming at you, that might be something that would be passed on from generation to generation and might now manifest itself to the point where I'm a little kid and I see a ball, I might go ahead and take that ball from the other kid. You know what I'm saying?
All right. You're saying that there might be an evolutionary explanation for why kids act the way they do. And yes, you know, if I were to give you the original assumption that you have, that evolution is a fact, then yeah, I can see where you come up with, you know, say this maybe has an evolutionary explanation. Sure, I get that.
Okay.
But I'm talking about just using your inductive reasoning and coming to some conclusions that you don't have though that connect the dot type of logic where you can prove every single thing. You can't prove every single thing that I'm saying or that the Bible says. Mm-hmm. And yet, some things the Bible is very persuasive about because it gives you the explanation and it not only rings true from your own experience, but then you act on it and it works.
Is that why you accept the Bible as the truth?
Because of that, why?
Yeah, you know, because you can look at something and apply it to your life, and you can see it manifesting.
Some parts of the Bible, I have come to believe because of that.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the Bible, I just respect because it knows a whole lot more than I do. It's taught me a lot.
Were you raised in a household that exposed you to the Bible?
Yes, they read the Bible to me since I was small. I understood the Bible. I didn't. I was not convinced by everything in it, and as a young man, I became skeptical, and I did have my time of skepticism. And although I tell you, I tried to be an atheist, I tried to think that way, and boy, was that a dead end. I mean, the conclusions you'd have to come to say that God does not exist became to me so incredibly unbelievable. You have to have a lot more faith to believe that God does not exist than to believe that He does.
Just to be clear, atheists would never say that they know that a God doesn't exist.
That's what atheism is. You say, right. I don't. Agnosticism says, I don't know.
That's right.
But atheism says, I believe God does not exist. And that's inductive reasoning. I get it. You say, well, after looking at the whole general picture, I come to the conclusion there's no God. And okay, that's inductive reasoning. It's not empirical proof.
Right.
It's not even deductive reasoning. Because there can be no proof that God does not exist.
I would define myself as an agnostic atheist. I don't know that a God doesn't exist.
But practically, you're not going to acknowledge any God.
I don't believe a God exists,
right.
So I'm atheist.
You're agnostic.
I'm an agnostic atheist. They're mutually exclusive. Right? What agnosticism is about knowledge. I don't know that a God doesn't exist. Right. So I'm agnostic on that issue. I don't believe that a God exists, so I'm also atheist on that position. I'm an agnostic atheist. So
okay,
not,
well, that's a little bit picky. It's fine.
Just to be clear, yeah. So, because I say, if I were to make the statements, you know, I know a God doesn't exist, well, then I should have the burden of proof to be able to illustrate to you how I know that.
Yeah, you would have the burden of proof, and that's not a provable assumption.
Right.
To say He does not exist.
Yes.
But then the obvious, like Thomas Paine said in his book Age of Reason,
mm-hmm. which so I think is
he
my
said, "You got it."
Yeah, it's a very difficult read.
It is. He's pretty intellectual,
yeah.
But he's definitely not a Bible believer. He does not believe the Bible,
and
he doesn't believe in Jesus. He doesn't believe those things. But he believed that God exists, and his argument was, as far as I'm concerned, impeccable. It's just plain rationality. You say. Yes. I mean, here we have the evolutionary mindset. It's a philosophy. One of the most deadliest, destructive philosophies that has ever happened to Earth.
Evolutionary
philosophy. And I can back that up. But here we have this evolutionary philosophy that says all of matter that exists right now used to be in a little bitty thing right there, and somehow it started expanding.
That's the Big Bang you're talking about.
Okay, whatever.
It's evolution.
No, it's evolutionary philosophy. Don't confuse the issue. Not evolution, but not biological evolution.
Okay.
Evolutionary philosophy is that this stuff just happened by these laws or whatever. Anyway, who knows where the laws came from?
I mean, it could be that the universe has always existed. Who knows? I mean, I don't get bogged down on that.
Okay, we do have empirical proof that things are going away from each other. All right. So the idea is that used to be real close together. But in order for it to produce in the universe like we have right now, it couldn't just expand at the speed it's expanding right now. It had to, what they call inflationary theory, and that's, some people believe that, other people deny it, and who knows whether it's true or not. But it had to go faster. And not only does it have to go faster, it has to keep on increasing in speed. Now, everything we know about gravity and about mass and about all that is that when stuff is that small, all smashed together, well, it doesn't separate. It just crushes right down into nothing. They're called black holes. But we have this idea that this all just... Are your ideas have always existed.
Possibly.
Look, that takes so much more faith than to believe that somebody designed this and made this happen, and he's a lot smarter than me.
What is your definition of faith?
Well, faith is actually believing something without seeing it. In other words, you don't see it directly. You're believing by the evidence.
Okay.
Faith, the Bible says faith is the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things not seen. The evidence of things you can't see.
Mm-hmm.
So faith is like flying in a thunderstorm at night when you can't see and all you have is instruments. And the instruments tell you, okay, you're at such an altitude, you're flying at this speed, and your GPS tells you you're at this spot, and here you are. And you can't see anything.
But wouldn't the instruments be the evidence?
Exactly. Instruments are evidence. You've got little sensors everywhere, and so you have evidence. So you have evidence of eyes, and you have evidence of... And so you can come up with some evidence to say, so I see this, but I don't see what's causing it. I turn on that light switch, and light happens. And so that is evidence that electricity exists.
You said that that's faith. See, I would say that that's a reasonable expectation or trust.
Okay, that's what I call faith.
But I think
faith is the evidence of things not seen.
Are there anything
Hebrews 11:1?
Right. Are there any other times in your life, Billy, where you would believe something is going to occur or would happen without having any evidence? Because faith is the substance.
With no evidence?
Mm-hmm.
No. Why would you have no evidence?
Isn't that what faith
beliefs?
Is?
No, faith is not believing with no evidence. Faith is believing with evidence.
See, I would say that that's trust.
My definition.
My definition of faith would be a belief without evidence.
You're talking about
blind faith. What is blind faith?
That's what you're talking about.
Is there a difference?
I don't accept blind faith. In fact, I think that's one of the most dangerous things in the world. Like believing blindly that evolution is a fact.
Are you using trust and evidence to arrive at your God belief, or are you using faith?
Well, that's what I call faith. That's my faith. Faith is...
Are you calling trust and faith synonyms?
Yeah, they're synonyms. They're synonyms. They're like synonyms.
See, I would argue that they're not. I think that believing in something...
Well, look at what the Bible says. I understand. You're saying that If that's what you're defining faith as, then I don't have any of it.
Well, I'm taking your...
I don't have
I'm
any.
Taking the Hebrews 11.
I have evidence of things not seen.
Right.
In other words, faith is...
So that wouldn't be trust if you could see something, correct?
Well, true. If you could see it, then it's already there. It's done. There's nothing to hope for, nothing. It's not certainty. Faith is not certainty. Faith is not empirical proof. But that doesn't mean it's without evidence. Of course you have to have evidence to believe something. Anybody who would believe something without evidence... Listen, reason cannot exist without faith, and faith cannot exist without reason. These things are both necessary.
What is your evidence for the belief, for your faith, in the faith of your belief in God? What is your evidence for that then?
You're sitting right there. Your evidence of my belief in God. God exists because there you are. Here I am. I've seen the sun. I've seen the universe. I look around. Something made this.
Your environment, trees.
Something created this. Something did this. This did not just happen.
Mm-hmm.
There's just way too much complexity here for this to have just happened.
And why would you veer towards the God answer and not towards
the no answer?
I just don't know what caused all this. Or,
well, that's not an answer. I don't know is not an answer.
If it's the most intellectually honest answer, wouldn't that...
Well, yeah, it would be true. If I give you an example, your daughter got in a cookie jar, and you go over there and you see the cookie jar has been gotten into, and there's only one other person in the house, and you know you didn't do it.
Right.
And you go over there and you see your daughter, and she's got cookie crumbs all over her mouth, and there's a part of a cookie on the floor right where she's sitting. And she says, you say, did you get in the cookie jar? And she says, I don't know. Now, is that intellectually honest to say, okay, that's true, we don't really know? No, you got evidence.
But you're shifting the burden to my daughter, whereas it really, it's me making the decision, correct?
Like, okay, but you would not be intellectually honest if you said, it's true, we don't know. For example, if she denied, she, I did not do that. And you have all that evidence there.
Right.
And you said, okay, I can't come to a conclusion. No matter how much evidence I have,
no,
I cannot come to a conclusion.
What I'm telling
you is the conclusion is so obvious to me that it would be intellectually dishonest for me to say, yeah, there's a possibility God does not exist. Of course God exists. There's no other plausible conclusion. Anybody who can't come to a conclusion after seeing the things that have been made, the things that exist, seeing DNA, I can see somebody wondering, you know, how maggots form in meat, and it must be just, it just happens, before they see the evidence. But we now know every little bit of life, every bit of life has an incredibly complex code behind it. Nothing just happens.
But Billy, if we can go back to the example of the cookie jar, which I thought was really good, where I'm observing these crumbs, I observe a half-eaten cookie in front of my daughter, and I can see crumbs around her mouth. You know, that would be evidence to me to trust my understanding that
yes,
she probably ate those cookies.
Yes.
Right?
Even if I might, she denied it.
Yes, sir. And I might even say, I might so far go to say, you know what, I don't know it for sure, but I strongly believe it. Where I might 99.98% believe that my daughter did it. Especially if my son was playing at a friend's house or something.
And wouldn't you say that you're not being very intellectual if you are not willing to believe the evidence that you see.
But see, in that example, I wouldn't be using faith to come to the conclusion.
Well,
that
yes,
my
it
daughter,
is faith.
No, sir. That
it is faith because you didn't see her do it. You did not see her do it. You put a whole lot of conclusions together, and you put a whole lot of evidence together, and came to a conclusion that went against what she said.
Faith is the substance of things unseen. I'm actually seeing the crumbs. I'm seeing the cookie on the top.
You're seeing the evidence. You didn't
yes.
see the action.
Right.
Your question is whether your daughter got in the cookie jar. You
right.
didn't see her do it. If you got fingerprints with her fingerprints on the jar, that still is not absolute proof that she did it.
But that wouldn't be faith because I have things that I can point to illustrate.
Well, then you're misunderstanding faith. At least my faith. My faith is not
again,
without
faith. Can you repeat Hebrews 11:1 again?
Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen.
The evidence of things unseen.
The evidence of things not seen.
So in that example, what's the evidence that's unseen?
I can't see God, but there's lots
so
of evidence.
Let's go to the cookie jar one.
Okay.
What's
I did not see my daughter get
action.
Into the cookie jar.
That's the action.
All right, I did not see her get into the cookie jar. But I believe that she did. Why? Well, because I have an awful lot of evidence pointing to it. It's like in court. You have beyond a reasonable doubt.
Things unseen.
Beyond a reasonable doubt means, and all the prosecutors do it every time they're dealing with a jury, they say, you know, you can't prove anything beyond any possible doubt because there's always some wild
example. There's a wild possibility that maybe my dog got.
But
it.
When you put a lot of evidence together, you get beyond a reasonable doubt. You get beyond where you could consider yourself reasonable if you still denied it.
But if faith is the evidence of things unseen, in the example of the cookie jar, these are you're pointing to things that you could actually see. That's
well, the evidence is seeable. But the thing you're believing is not what's seeable. You're saying believing in God. I can't see God, and God makes a point of that. Nobody can see God. He's not going to prove himself directly to you. Because it has to be by faith. That's what he says, at least in the Bible. And it's obvious too, because we haven't seen him. I haven't seen him.
Right.
And some people might think they've seen him, but I don't have to believe them either. So, I haven't seen God, but you ask me, what is it that makes me believe that he exists? wow, I see a lot of things. The Bible says,
okay, so you're pointing to the Bible and your environment.
No, but
that's the evidence.
This is the argument. This is the argument Paul had in Romans 1. He says, for the invisible things of God from the creation of the world. This is Romans 1:20. For the invisible things of God from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even His eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. And that's the point. The point is, you have an ulterior motive, and I don't mean that negatively, like you're a bad person. You have a reason you haven't quite figured out yet. You have something in you that motivates you to not believe in God. And a lot of people do.
Lack of evidence.
Okay, that's your arrogant way of saying, I'm way too intellectual to believe in God. And so that's fine.
I'm open to it.
I get it.
It could be shown.
I get it. But listen, you are seeing the evidence everywhere. But you're saying, I reject all that evidence. I reject the DNA as a digital code. I reject the Big Bang the ridiculousness of evolution, information increase by random mutations. I reject all of the evidence that people point to about God. In fact, you could reject the evidence if God came down and showed you Himself.
If a God knew me, this God would know what it would take to convince me.
And He could convince you.
Right. Yes.
When I was in high school, I saw a movie called Oh God with George Burns and John Denver. And John Denver was a cab driver. He was a cab driver.
Yeah.
And George Burns got in the back of the cab and he says, I'm God and I want you to do something for me. And John Denver said, well, why am I going to believe that? Why would I believe you that you're God? And of course, this has been a long time ago, so I'm not getting it all right. But he says, well, I'll prove it to you. What do you want? What do you want? And he says, okay, well, make it rain. And so, and of course, he had already done a couple other things to try to prove it, and it wasn't going to happen.
Uh-huh.
So he says, make it rain. And so he made it rain inside the cab. And then John Denver was convinced because this guy made it rain inside the cab, So it's not difficult for God to prove that He exists. He doesn't want to. He doesn't want to prove it to you. He wants to let you fight your own arrogance.
Does God want you to take His existence on faith?
Faith in evidence, not faith, not blind faith, not like, I believe this no matter what.
See, I would argue that there's no difference between faith in blind faith.
Well, then you're not understanding. You don't understand.
See, I think you're using the word trust and faith as synonyms.
Well, I know what trust means, and I know what faith means, and I know what faith means to me. And you're not going to redefine it for me if you don't want to accept
faith as evidence.
Okay, evidence. Faith is believing evidence, not believing the thing itself.
Faith is the belief of things unseen, right?
Evidence. No, it's the evidence of things.
The substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things
unseen. It's the evidence of things.
So how, in any example that we've talked about, is faith evidence?
Okay, faith not is in, it's talking about faith in the abstract, not your faith is evidence. The fact that you believe something is not evidence of anything. Right? The fact that Muslims believe that
I can believe that I can walk out
that
here
Gabriel
now,
appeared
it's
to
be
whatever.
Snowing. It may not.
No matter what you believe, that's not evidence.
Right.
But when it says faith is the evidence, it's talking about the abstract, what faith is, what we're talking about when we say faith. Not your faith or my faith or an individual's faith. But faith in the abstract, what is it? It's the evidence of things not seen. So what the Bible describes evidence as is you believe something that you have not seen. Jesus says, Thomas, put your hands in my side, because you said you weren't going to believe unless you could put your hands in my side. And he says, well, do that. Touch me. Now, you've seen me, right? He says, and you believe because you've seen me. See, there it is. Faith is after seeing. But he says, blessed are they which have not seen and yet believe. And so I have not seen Jesus Christ risen from the dead. But there are a whole bunch of witnesses that say they did see Him, and they wrote some very persuasive literature.
And you're willing to take their word
Not blindly.
Is there evidence?
Yes, that's the only evidence that there is. There is no other evidence. Right. We don't have any evidence that George Washington existed.
We do.
Sorry.
It's the same thing as saying I believe that we walked on the moon. I don't know it. I didn't see it. Nobody that I know saw it, but it's written about. We got TV on it. So I wasn't there.
Yeah.
But that's faith, right?
Well, eyewitness evidence is evidence.
We can talk to astronauts that have been there. We can talk to NASA folks. We can look at videos, footage, that type of stuff, right?
Okay, but wait a minute. No, you're missing the point. When I said we don't have proof that George Washington existed, only proof we have is word of mouth. We have testimony.
We have newspaper clippings. We have
exactly that's testimony.
We have fingerprints
look, it's written
wooden
on
pencil
paper.
That he used. Maybe his wooden teeth.
Wait a minute, Anthony. You make so many big jumps in your assumptions. You say we have fingerprints of George Washington?
Well,
but you don't have.
We may have a wax seal where he put his fingerprint on, for example.
Okay, and how do we know that's his fingerprint? How do we know the person buried in his grave is George Washington? We don't have empirical proof of almost anything. We're taking somebody's word for it.
We have far more.
We're taking somebody's word.
We have far more evidence that George Washington existed than Jesus ever did.
Probably so. Probably so. Okay. There's a big difference in the time.
But see, I'm not using faith to say, I'm believing in George Washington's based on faith.
Hold on. It's not blind faith that I say I believe what Paul wrote.
No.
I read what he wrote. He is an eyewitness. He says, I saw this. Mm-hmm. And then I judge or I discern his character, whether he's telling the truth or not, whether he's a believable witness or not, whether he's the only witness or not. If I had 10 people come to me and tell me that guy shot that guy, I saw him, then it's a pretty credible thing because you got 10 different people telling you that.
Sure.
And if you get them 1,000 years later, you could probably still trust them because, well, we have evidence. We have people who said, this is what that person said. We have people who said, this is what Paul said. And what Paul said, according to what these people wrote, he said he saw Jesus Christ risen from the dead. Peter also said the same thing, and a whole bunch of other people wrote the same thing. And something happened so powerfully during that time that it changed the world. And so I can put all of that information together, and I can say, that's enough. That's beyond a reasonable doubt. I believe that they actually did see him rise again from the dead. And if I had the preconceived notion that nobody can ever possibly rise again from the dead, if that was my assumption, then I would probably deny all of their testimony, all of their witnesses. But if I don't have that preconceived notion, if I think, it makes perfect sense to me that this is not the end and God built this. He could build anything he wanted. He could reconstitute me if he wanted to. It doesn't seem unreasonable. Then I would believe them.
Have you ever heard the phrase, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence?
I agree with that. I agree with that.
Whereas, the existence of George Washington, my eternal salvation or burning in hell, is really not dependent on the existence of George Washington.
So you need less proof, and it's more likely that...
Yes. Yeah. You do see that. Okay.
Yeah,
I'm glad that you see that. Because, and I'm not going out in front of the Alamo every Sunday to preach about the existence of George Washington and that you must follow his doctrine. I think that there's a higher burden of proof to base your beliefs on, let's say, Jesus, for example, or the Bible. Whereas, just pointing to 500 witnesses that another person reported to say that they saw this thing happen, 2,000 years ago. We have people that are abducted that claim to be abducted by aliens, right? They will swear that, they'll pass polygraph tests. They might even have 10 witnesses that they can point to that would bolster their belief. Now, whether I choose to believe them or not, again, it comes back to, do I trust them? Do I know them?
You evaluate the witnesses.
That's right. That's right.
But you have to evaluate
the witnesses. We have no witnesses to evaluate in the case of Paul.
Sure
we
do.
But we just have his testimonial
we have witnesses just like we have witnesses of George Washington. Newspaper reports and stuff like that. And somebody reported something, and we still have it in literature. It's there.
Are you talking extra-biblical at this point?
No, I'm talking about the Bible.
Talking about Paul reporting the 500?
Paul wrote 14 different letters that we still have. He might have wrote many more than that, but we still have those. And I've read them, and they are very persuasive. This man, something changed his life. Something changed Paul. And he tells us what it is. And it not only changed him, it changed a lot of other people too. He wasn't the only witness. He's a very persuasive man. But
there were other witnesses to
Jesus' rising from the dead. Peter, John, they all wrote. We have their books. We have their literature. It's evidence. Now, you don't have to believe it. You can think they were all smoking their socks. You know, who knows what they were doing. You can say they were all lunatics. But obviously something happened. Something changed these people. And this has been corroborated. The fact that these men existed and preached this thing and changed the entire world, it's corroborated by all the evidence. There's nothing denying it. I mean, we've got Tacitus mentioning it. We know that Christianity, something happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so, when you put it all together, one thing won't prove it. One statement won't prove it.
Yeah.
But when you put it all together, and then add on the other things, like I mentioned to you other times, so many things that are just ring true, so many things that have helped me in my life. You put it all together, and then you get to that point of trust, where you're willing to give it the benefit of the doubt.
But that sounds like, yeah, now I think we're in agreement as to what trust might be, where you're
pointing to evidence. I agree with you what trust is. Faith in God, the existence of God, is based on reason. It's based on evidence that I can see.
Faith, but
trust in the Bible.
Things unseen.
Faith is based on evidence. Faith is an evidentiary reasoning. It's you can't see God, but you can know He exists by these points of evidence, and they become overwhelming. When it comes to believing in God, it's beyond a reasonable doubt. I think you are being unreasonable to doubt the existence of God, because I think it's been plenty well proven. It's overwhelming.
Do you think that the reason that you gravitate towards the Christian God is because of the manner in which you were raised?
Sure.
You say that you were raised in a Christian
country. Absolutely.
Do you think that if all things were the same and you were raised in a completely different country where, I don't know,
sure,
Russia, you know,
yeah,
100 years ago, and
Saudi Arabia,
you're Muslim or something like that.
Yeah.
You're raised in the mountains in Russia or something. You know,
yeah,
what I mean?
But
do you think that you would have found your way to the Christian God, or would you be
no,
you know, talking about the benefits of Allah?
I'm just an average human being, and what other people are going through, I'm no different than them. I think God intervenes where He wants to. He makes a point of stepping into some people's lives. And he does it. The Bible says He does it for other people's sake. He has a relationship with people. God has a relationship, not with everybody, but He has a relationship with people. And through that relationship, He chooses. He goes out and deals with people. He intervenes in their life. He changes them. He makes them. He changed me when I was a teenager. It changed me. He made me realize. And it was through the death of my grandfather. It made me start thinking. It made me start evaluating the Bible, not from an intellectual, what I call arrogant attitude about, you know, who I am and how smart I am and how I want to be around a smart kid. It made me start realizing life is a whole lot more than this. There's something here. And then the Bible supplied the answers. Now, if I had been somewhere else and I didn't have the Bible, or I was not taught to trust it, or not even had never known it,
yes,
then yes, I would have come to different conclusions probably. But this is God's doing. This is God's dealing in our minds.
But I find it really interesting that, you know, that you would, you know, concede that, you know, if you were raised in a different society with a different belief system and a different book, that you probably would have turned to, let's say, the Quran instead of the Bible, because you would have never been exposed to the Bible.
That's right.
Isn't that going full circle with the street preaching, though? That's why you do it? You see that these people weren't raised with the same benefit of having the Bible in their life, and you're trying to give it to them. Isn't that going full circle with the street preaching angle?
That's true.
They weren't raised this way.
That's
we
the
want to help them. We want.
That's
to,
the reason why they preach.
Yeah.
That's why Troy preaches.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they stand out.
People,
yeah,
people not
say, you know, if I was your neighbor and your house was on fire, I'd want to help you. I'd want to run over there and tell you that your house is on fire.
And you would not be offended.
Right.
If somebody's yelling at you, hey, your house is on fire, get out.
But if my house is not on fire and he calls me at 3 in the morning and
then you would
my
be
whole family. And that's kind of where I see maybe they're coming from, is that
I agree.
They have a perception that the house is on fire, but I don't smell any smoke. I see a perfectly intact house.
You think our house is intact? Do you know how many children are victims of trafficking right here in this town?
Oh, there's some horrible things that humans do.
So our house is not intact.
But I mean, that would
there's some real problems. It's called sin, and people are very evil.
I wouldn't use the word sin or evil, but
well, of course you wouldn't.
People are harmful.
That's from our perspective. We preach because our house is on fire. The evolutionary philosophy, remember what I told you? Evolutionary philosophy, not the specific biological evolutionary theory.
Okay.
But the evolutionary philosophy that there's no real cause, it's all outworking of the laws of nature. This idea that there's no accountability, no whatever, it came about and it created the new atheism. You know, from the Ingersoll on all the way up to the Dawkins era, you know, it's whatever, it's fine. We understand, I get it, it's not far-reaching, and I even considered it. But that's where it came from. It comes from the evolutionary philosophy. It has caused more deaths in this century than all the religious wars in history combined.
Evolution?
Evolutionary philosophy. Marxism, fascism, Nazism, you know what I'm talking about. You want to talk about actual evolutionary philosophy where you don't have any accountability to God and you hate religion, you think religion is the opium of the people or that sort of thing. I don't know how many died in the Leninist purges, but the Stalinist purges, they say over 25 million Russians were killed in the Stalinist purges. And we know in the first couple of years of the Cultural Revolution in China, where our wonderful atheist allies over there killed 25 million in the first couple of years, and since then many more. And how many Christians were jailed like Watchman Knee and spent 20 years in jail, and before they could let him out, he was due to be out. They killed him in jail, you know.
Harmful things are happening because people lack a belief in a God?
Not because of a lack of a belief in a God, but the doctrine, this evolutionary philosophy is damaging. It destroys the soul. It destroys it from inside. It leaves people without any accountability, any reason, any purpose, any higher desire.
We're kind of getting more morality now.
All right, no, like, I'm not trying to go there. I'm just trying to say. You said our house is not on fire. You know, I don't see my house is on fire, and I see it all the time. I'm in the courts every single day. I see the house on fire. I see kids turning to drugs. I see fornication everywhere. And we're talking about morality that has become less and less focused on our duty to God. All of these things. Our house is on fire.
But with all due respect,
it's being destroyed right in front of our eyes.
You're taking the house on fire example that I was using to say, he's telling me that I'm going to hell because I don't believe in a God. My house is on fire. He wants to help me. And you're sort of shifting it to say, we have all these ills in our society, and that's why we're doing what we're
doing. Yes, these ills didn't just happen. It's not like, you know, because you know, when you get certain distance away from your revolution, your country starts falling apart. No, philosophy has changed people's minds. And this evolutionary philosophy, this idea that we can just live without God and without any obedience to Him, or actually just denying the Bible and completely throwing it out of our lives, and then wonder why kids are fornicating, why they're in front of our eyes becoming drug addicts, or being victims of trafficking, or pedophiles, or whatever. Or all kinds of things that destroy our society. And then someone stands out there on the street and says, this is the reason. The reason is sin. And then someone else says, my house is not on fire. We're all fine. Everything's fine. Leave us alone.
Here's the thing. I have the position that morality would never come from a book. It's never come from a book in the past. It never will come from a book. You know,
morality, mean the abstract morality?
Meaning being good. You know, I'm not a good person because of a book.
Nobody's good. But none of us good.
I think we're all capable of doing harmful things.
Yes.
Even the most generous, nice, compassionate.
Excuse me for a minute. Talk
sure. What time is it, anyways?
I'm not in a rush. I'm not trying to rush you off.
No,
10:20.
Oh gosh, I can be home at 10:30.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I thought this would be like an hour.
There's always another day.
Yeah, definitely. I'd like to keep the dialogue open.
I kept
open.
Getting up earlier. There was a car that parked right outside, and there was just some sitting in there, so I just opened the door and I was watching.
Yeah.
And a cop came through here, and I was like, all right, no, good.
Huh.
We've had a lot of car break-ins.
I was going to say, the last time I was here, there was a cop parked way in the back there.
This neighborhood has gone downhill, you know.
Yeah.
We've gotten our cars broken into a few times.
Yeah.
Several times I go outside and check. Or
I was early on Thursday. I kind of drove around. I was a little. Some houses were really nice, but some were kind of real shady.
Just, you know, things go.
Yeah.
And it's a dark. Well, we put these big, huge lights up because of the break-ins. We all right. Add something to it, but.
Yeah. I really wish I could keep the interview going.
Yeah.
Maybe we can table it for another day. And thank you again for the short notice.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Sorry, I don't get a chance to do much.
Yeah. Good.
Well, I have to get home to my mom.
You gotta go. All right,
yeah,
man.
Kids.
Hey, take it easy.
Hey, you too.
I'll see you around.
Sunday.
Yeah. All right.
What is that? Is that a laser pointer?
No, that's a recorder.
Oh, okay. Just in case, the editing.
Yeah. Just thought we had to do. So do you believe there's, I mean, right and wrong?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if I do something that causes harm to somebody, I would say that that's wrong. Yeah.
And that's in this, but let's say after death.
After death?
After death, there's nothing happened. So basically, whoever can overpower can do anything they want.
No. I mean, I think most people are good because they know that there are consequences, right? Like, I was about to give the example. You know, I wouldn't go out and shoot somebody to steal their car because I know that I might be taking away a husband of a family. You know, I might get caught and arrested. There are going to be consequences.
But there's people that don't care.
There are some people that don't care, right?
And that's the question. What happens to them? What happens?
Well,
and they just do whatever they want because they don't have,
they're taking a risk that they're going to get caught, you know.
Well, let's say they're in a place that they won't get caught and there's no real justice system. Or like I said, they just have overpower. They're overpowering everybody and nobody could do anything even if they wanted to. Can they just do anything they want to and nothing's going to happen?
I mean, from a secular humanist perspective, morality, you know, I make my choices in a construct of society, right? The family that I was raised in, the city that I live in, the state, the laws of the state, you know, the laws of the country, you know, what my mom and dad told me when I was growing up as a kid. You know, all those things shape my morality. You know, I wouldn't kill somebody because I know that would cause them some harm. You know, I can get arrested. I can, you know, be ostracized from my family, that type of stuff.
But that's not the only reason you wouldn't kill somebody.
Right. Yeah, I just want
you have an interior, what the rational sense is called empathy.
Yes.
You feel what other people feel.
Right.
You see somebody suffering, you suffer.
Right.
And that itself is an inward built morality.
Yeah, we've seen experiments with capuchin monkeys where there's two monkeys in the cage. I don't know if you've seen this video. It's great. It's sort of a fairness thing and empathy as well. But you have these two monkeys where, you know, one is given a grape, which is a desirable treat, and the other one's given cucumber, which is still okay, but it's not as good as the grape. And, you know, monkey A gets the grape. And monkey B can see that, and monkey B gets the cucumber. Well, this experiment gets repeated a couple times until the monkey B starts realizing, hey, you know, that's not fair. And he actually starts rejecting the cucumber. So, you know, there's a sense of fairness that we can see in primates, you know, that
It's built in.
It's built in, right?
And don't you realize
selected for process.
That the more, well, what the Bible says is, the more a person is given, the more is required. The more a person has been given, the more it will be required of him. That's Jesus' precept. He says, if you've been given more light, you're expected to accomplish more with it. He gives the example of his servants. He gives five talents, okay. One, two talents, whatever.
Yes.
One talent. But the five talents brought back ten, and the two brought back four.
Gotcha.
And the one hid the talent, and he said, that's terrible. You shouldn't have done that. You should have tried. You should have done something. You should have brought me something because you were given something.
Yeah.
You owe something.
Mm-hmm.
And these are precepts of morality. If you've been given a lot more light, if you know a whole lot more than someone else, for example, you would be more accountable. For even in our courts, even in our justice system, we know it. Someone like you is more accountable than, say, someone who has an IQ of 60. You're more accountable.
Mm-hmm.
They just passed the rule. I guess they just passed it, or they just were talking about it on the radio, that the IQ is 75. They can't go to the death penalty because if they're under 75, it's just illegal. You can't put somebody through the death penalty if they're under 75.
Where is this?
IQ. It's in Texas.
Oh,
so
I thought you were saying age, for example. For
75. No. IQ is 75. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
No. So we recognize that an ape is a lot less accountable than a human.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do recognize accountability. It's built into us. We know that everybody's accountable. I believe that was the point he was making. And that there's an accountability involved. It's innate in us.
Right.
So if you do something wrong,
I know that there's
you kill someone,
right.
Then you're accountable.
Right.
But what penalty is there if all we are is a jumble of amino acids?
Well, there's let's say I'm the breadwinner of my house and I get arrested and put in jail, there's going to be a penalty for that, right? Right, my family might struggle.
Consequences.
There's consequences. That's right.
But that's not exactly accountability, because you could actually have, you could actually get, for example, a whole lot of drug dealers live it up, and they live a long time. They have the best care, and
right.
Everything's taken. Some of them are 100 years old, they're just living it up.
I completely agree. There's no cosmic justice. You know, you could be the most rotten person.
Well, you're assuming there's none. Because of your preconception. You say there's no cosmic justice. I say that doesn't make no sense. I cannot believe that there's no justice. God gives us a sense of right and wrong, and we all have it. You have it, even those monkeys have it.
See, I feel that justice really is a concept that humans
invented.
Yeah, that's right.
No, see, I don't believe that.
You know?
I believe that it's an abstract fact. It's a truth that exists.
Yeah.
Justice exists because all of us know it. We all recognize it. Every single culture recognizes it. We all know murder is wrong. We all know stealing is wrong.
Or is it?
All of us do.
Yeah.
And we also know that there's an accountability, and that you're gonna, if not, then it's all meaningless. And in fact, if it's not, if it's true, if evolutionary philosophy is true, then, well, whoever killed the most people and had, you know, all of the species that dominate and wipe out the others, they're the winners. And that's the way it ought to be. Whereas that's what we know is not true. We know as humans we are more accountable because we have a whole lot more light. God has given us a lot more light. You have such an ability to reason. You, just an average person, has such an ability to reason. And I don't think we...
Evolution is a wonderful process.
Yeah. if it could possibly happen, that would be amazing.
I really have to end the interview.
Okay,
can we
no
pick
problem.
It up at another time?
I guess whenever you want.
Okay. All right. I'm so sorry. I have to get back to my family.
No problem. I understand that.
All right. All right. Thank you very much. I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, no problem.
And keep in touch.
Sure.
Okay.
You know where we are.
Yes,
you got
I do.
Your number.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Billy.
Yeah.
Thank you. See you, Andy. Appreciate it.
Yeah. We'll take care of it.
I just want to share.
That's